everybody. Welcome to episode 400 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Manny.
And we have the whole crew here for you tonight. We're going to do a special episode in honor of the 400th-ish episode. We are going to give you a little guide into how to collect comics, or how we think you should collect comics, or how you can get started collecting comics, or reading them, if you prefer that term. You know, there's lots of different ways to do it. Some people collect and never read. Some people read and don't ever bag and board. So, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to look at it, and we'll cover several ways that kind of came to mind when we were kind of brainstorming this episode. We're also going to give some recommendations on some books that you can start with as they pertain to certain characters. But first, we're going to give everybody's secret origin of how we got started in comics, and then we'll do a little trivia, see if we can give each other some brain teasers here, and then we'll get into the beginner's guide to comics and talking about the nuts and bolts of collecting. So let's start with you, Manny. What is your secret origin? Tell us how you became a...
Well, I was blessed to be able to grow up in the 90s. So as a child, I got to enjoy such cartoons as X-Men, the animated series, Spider-Man, the animated series, Batman, the animated series, Adventures of Superman, Batman Beyond, Static Shock. I mean, just with a plethora of just really, really good. I'm a comic book adaptations for shows on Fox and on WB. So, of course, I always had these characters close to me, but obviously, you know that I'm foremost a Batman fan more than anything. I didn't really necessarily gravitate to comics too seriously until later. And that started off with when I first read Batman the Killing Joke by Alan Moore and Brian, with artwork by Brian Bullard, just because, I don't know, I'd always seen them as kind of, never really took them as too much of a serious stories. And then that was the first one that kind of just like blew my mind. And but still, I didn't necessarily, thanks to my parents, have too great access to them. And then so it wasn't necessary. So I didn't really start collecting comic books until I ran into a certain coworker of mine who I worked for about a year and a half. And he facilitated me a couple of digital books that, yeah, I see you waving. Yes, it's you, Jace. You were the one who started my addiction. That's costed me thousands of dollars and countless hours of my life. WonderCon 5 years ago is when I started officially collecting comic books, and it all started with Batman Zero Year and Superman Unchained, because as after that DC panel, that's the first time I went into one of our local shops here. Well, not so local, because I'm in the middle of nowhere in Fresno, and picked up Batman Zero Year and Batman Unchained number one, and then it all went downhill from there.
Well, depending on your point of view, some would say that your life began 5 years ago when you started reading comics.
I mean, I'm not sure if it started then or if it started when I held an Archer and Armstrong number one gold book from it was a 97 or something like that, yeah. in a greasy burger diner. that I think that's when it really started, because, you know, it's one thing to read a book from, you know, a Batman book, a Spider-Man book or whatever, but once you start getting into those independent titles, that's the real rabbit hole.
Yeah, that's for sure. But, you know, in my defense for getting you into this hobby or lifestyle, if you will, because I had so much experience with going to conventions and meeting creators and everything, from the first time, like, you really you kind of had the red carpet rolled out for you. I mean, your first time at San Diego Comic-Con, your first time attending, you had a press pass and you stayed right across the street. My friend, you don't understand the pain of having to go through the waiting room and the anxiety of not knowing if you get a badge and having to ride the metro because you're staying at a hotel that's, you know, 20 miles. You've had it good, I will say.
Well, you know, I didn't even struggle to get in because years past, you were always like, get your ticket for Comic-Con and whatever. And I'm like, nah, not going. Then the next year, nah, not going. Following year, uh-uh. Then it wasn't until my second year with LRM that it was like, hey, we're going to put the team together to go to Comic-Con. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go. And Michael was the one who facilitated me my pass. And I didn't have to do anything for it. I don't know about these. What are these waiting rooms you speak of? I don't understand.
I remember telling you, like, dude, like, as much as WonderCon is cool and these other shows, you got to go to Comic-Con. Like, I can't accurately describe it, like, until you go. And then you finally went last year, and then you knew. Then you finally understood exactly what I was talking about. It's a must.
Comic-Con ruined every other show for me. That's exactly what it did.
Well, there's no other show like it, especially when it comes to panels, like panels covering comics. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Access to creators, publishers. I mean,
the gifts they give you after the panels are just ridiculous too.
Yeah.
I mean, we got Flash Conan pops last year for attending a, I think it was like almost like a, the predecessor to a DCU panel that
it was
we
just, yeah, it was just a DCU panel. I mean, I've gotten tablet. Like I got a Kindle one year. I've gotten hats.
Yeah, I got posters, a Kindle one year. Yeah, that's right.
Comics, sketches. I mean, yeah, you name it. So I didn't coin this term, but it's certainly appropriate. It's San Diego Comic Con is definitely nerdvana. So, all right. Well, let's move on. Let's hear Nick's secret origin. I'll go out on a limb and say it has something to do with comic book movies or something.
Yeah. It does. So I had the animated shows growing up too. I liked Batman and Spider-Man and X-Men, and it was all cool. But I really wasn't into the superhero comics as a kid. I was like into like Disney Afternoons and stuff when I was really little, like Chip and Dale or Darkwing Duck comics, and then like Simpsons comics. And then a movie came out in 2002 that like everyone else in my high school went to except for me because I didn't care about superheroes. And it was called Spider-Man. And so I got tickets for the second weekend and went, and it was awesome. It was one of the best movies I've ever seen. So eventually I just got into like comic book culture more and more and more. And Andrew and I, when he was out one year in LA, talked about us going to a comic book shop someday. So the minute I moved home from California in 2011, we both went into a comic book shop, which just happened to be the week that the New 52 started, or the month. So we picked up, Detective Comics number one and Batman number one. He picked up Action Comics and Superman number one. And I've been adding comics ever since. And I owe Andrew money for them.
But okay, but you're more of a Marvel guy. But just based on the timing of you happened to walk in September 2011 when the New 52 started.
Exactly, issue one.
So you're like, well, we can get in on the ground floor. It's a brand new. I mean, I'm sure.
Plus, I'm more of a Marvel guy, but this is entirely because of the Nolan movies. I thought Batman was a stupid character until the Nolan movies, even though I like the animated series and Batman Forever. Batman's my favorite. I'm more of a Marvel guy, but Batman's my favorite character overall. So he kind of trumps Marvel.
So you walk into the shop and you're like, did you guys look around? Did the people working behind the counter be like, oh, you know, what are you looking for?
There was like the resident expert who had rated all of the comics. He didn't even work there. He just rated every issue of New 52 and had it on the wall. And he's just like leaning against the wall. He's like, you guys need help with comics?
He didn't just rate the comics. He had each comic rated on art and writing.
Oh, yeah.
And an overall score.
Was just a regular. He wasn't the owner.
Wow, that's hardcore. You know, we used to do trivia on the show all the time, and maybe we'll do it again someday. But we had New 52 trivia that we did for a long time where Manny or Jaden would like ask, they'd give me the creative team and I'd have to tell them which New 52 title that they did. I don't think we ever finished it. I was trying to see if I could get all 52. So, all right. Well, that's a relatively simple origin. You fell in love with the movies and eventually decided, hey, these stories come from somewhere. Let me check out the source material. So you went, you picked up Detective and Batman, and then were you hooked right away?
Yeah. I mean, I'd always like, growing up, I had a chance to read some of Andrew's dad's Spider-Man comics. Of course, Spider-Man was my favorite after the movie, so I suddenly showed interest in them. Not to spoil Andrew's entire origin story, but we treated those comics not as well as we should have in retrospect. But I read like some great early Green Goblin stories there and stuff. But I didn't really buy any. Because the thing is, when you're growing up, I got Star Wars comics too. But like when you're growing up and you only get comics at like a bookstore in the mountains where my family has a condo, or at the grocery store, you just get single issues. You never get a full arc of something. Yeah. So comics never seemed like a thing I could achieve until I was buying my own after college.
Buying off the newsstand was a lot more challenging with, you know, following a monthly title and you'd randomly miss an issue just because it wasn't there. I do remember those days quite vividly. So,
well, we went to the shop and they had a deal that if you got 5 books, you could
sign up. They had their program. You 5 books, they'll do a pull list for you, and you'd save. I think they gave you 5% off.
No, I thought it was 10%, but that's the same as like tax.
Yeah, so basically they basically give you tax off.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, I guess we as 2 people can definitely find 5 comic books we're interested in, and for that worked for about 2 months. Before we just started
with, though,
adding the 5th one we started with was Avengers 1969 or 1959. It was
it was a
mini series.
Yep.
I think we discussed this on the podcast before because it had like the really blocky people that you hate.
Yeah, it had the terrible fat faces in it.
All right, Andrew. Well, let's hear your secret origin. You obviously had read comics before you went to Mile High. We'll give him a plug.
That's right. Yes. As Nick has spoiled most of my origin, but I grew up...
They're related. It's a crossover origin.
I grew up reading my father's comics. He put them in a milk crate, put them in my room, and let me have at them. I read them over and over and pawed through them over and over. It was mostly Spider-Man.
He had some Spider-Woman. He had lots of Spider characters.
A lot of Spider family, and I tore those things to pieces.
Now, do you remember the earliest issue of Spider-Man that was in there? You mentioned Green Goblin, so that's...
Well, the one where Green Goblin found out he was Peter Parker's in there.
Yeah, so that's classic, really classic stuff. It's not like super as early as... It's not like Steve Ditko, you know, the legendary Steve Ditko, who helped co-create Spider-Man, just passed away recently, but those are still worth a pretty penny if they're in decent shape these days.
Well, let me assure you, they are not in decent shape.
But like, there are covers from your nephew.
There are covers taken from one and put on another. Like the outside cover has been replaced with a new outside cover. So it's not, they're not worth anything.
At least that happened from you reading them.
That's how it happened. Yeah. Just, I read those things to death. But even when I was reading then, I had the same problem as Nick had later, where he never had a continuous run of anything. These all just seemed to be random issues pulled. So I had never fully grasped the story structure that comics create until the year 2012, when after Nick came back to town.
2011.
All right, 2011. Excuse me. I was 3 months off.
Yeah, so did you... So you read them growing up and you always had an interest. Hey, the movies are starting to come out. I want to know what these comic things are all about. Was that what kind of drove you to inspire?
Well, I think, but basically I just, once Nick was on the movie, because I was always on board. When I was a kid, I would also, because I was pawing through those comic books, I would go to the store and buy. The first thing I would always buy was Superman. And I was just so lucky that during my prime buying time at that age, it was the blue Superman.
Loves blue Superman.
I love the blue Superman because of this. I don't know if that's a widely held opinion, but I think blue Superman is just the bee's knees. So
that's really interesting, actually. I have another friend that any of you listeners that watch DC All Access, he used to be one of the co-hosts, Jason Inman, who is probably about your age, Andrew, and he has... as well has an affinity. He loves Superman. It's his favorite character, but has a special place in his heart for the blue Superman. And I don't know if you, Nick, if you've read, I think it was issue 9 of Blue Beetle. Mr. Miracle, rather. Throughout the series, uh-huh. Mitch Gerrits has always depicted Mr. Miracle wearing superhero t-shirts. And at WonderCon, at the Mitch Gerrits spotlight panel this last year, it was moderated by Jason Inman. And he challenged Mitch Gerrits right there up on the stage in front of everybody that in an upcoming Mr. Miracle, he should draw Mr. Miracle wearing a t-shirt with the icon of the blue Superman. And he offered him $50. And sure enough, he did it in Mr. Miracle number 9. And then when Jason was here at Phoenix Comic Con, he paid Mitch off, and it was a special moment. So yeah, there are great plenty book. Of blue Superman fans out there. They may be the minority. The whole blue Superman, blue and red Superman storyline is a bit of its time in the late 90s, but it does have its fans. So. But not to interrupt, so you would periodically go and still buy comics off the rack, even though you weren't getting the full stories?
Yeah, and so I never really still got that story structure, but I still kind of understood the overall arching plots. And then I finally got my dream realized in apparently September 2011, and we went into the store. Because I just never done it, because going by myself just didn't seem that much fun. But once I had someone tag along when he was back in town.
And we talked about it, your last trip to California. We were at Universal City and they have a comic book shop that's mostly just a tourist trap where they mostly sell like trades and statues to like rich tourists. There's not really comics there at all. And you were like, we should start going to a comic book shop. And I'm like, fine, if I move home, we'll do it. And you're like, fine. And then we end up with hundreds of dollars worth of comics. Yeah. Thousands of dollars worth of comics.
Seven years later, still going strong. So
yeah, stronger. I wish it would slow down. It just keeps speeding up.
Well, you raise an interesting point, though. You got into it because it was something that you and Nick could do together. And I want to point that out to any of you listeners who are thinking about getting into comics. It's very much a community thing, right? I mean, yes, you read them yourself, and that's a solitary activity. But so much of what enjoying comics and learning about comics is being able to talk about them with your friends, being able to talk about storylines and characters and speculate on upcoming storylines and what's going to happen and what would happen if Hulk fought Superman, you know, the whole classic who beats who in a fight, or what particular creators you'd like to see on what particular characters and all that kind of stuff. It's very much a community activity, really. And I think that's very much reflected in this explosion of conventions that's going on right now. It's real easy to go to one of these conventions and find like-minded people, right? Like if you love My Little Pony, for example, you know, you go to a show and look for the people that are dressed up as My Little Pony, or go talk to one of the artists there that draws My Little Pony. And it's real easy to connect to other people that have the same interest and kind of grow your friends that are interested and meet people that have the same kind of interest, and you can, you know, talk about comics and grow your knowledge that way. All right, so I guess it's my turn. My origin's a little different, but it's I remember it like it was yesterday. When I learned to read, now when I went to kindergarten, you know, back in the dark ages when they, you know, electricity had barely been discovered, they didn't teach you how to read in kindergarten like they do now, right? But I was always, you know, pretty smart for my age, you know, maybe above average intelligence.
Yeah,
even though I wasn't taught to read, I kind of self-taught myself. And by the end of kindergarten, I was maybe one of two kids that could read a lot of sight words, you know, like Jane and Spot, and I think Dick was the other, you know, with the boy and the girl that had the dog or whatever. And I remember having the book and reading it till it literally fell apart that summer between my my kindergarten year and my first grade year. So my mom started taking me to the library once or twice a week. I'd go and I'd pick out like Dr. Seuss books and some other books like that were pretty easy for me to read. And I remember perusing through there and in the kids' children's section, there was a Charlie Brown book, and it was something about the guide to collecting, you know, building collections, something like that. I could find it if I went on Amazon to look. But anyway, I remember checking out this book. It was a really thick book, whatever. And, you know, mostly I was kind of looking at the pictures. But I do remember it going in my family's camper. We were driving to Santa Cruz, I think, to go camping. And I was in the back of this, like, RV, like, kind of struggling through this book, trying, you know, probably every 5 minutes or less, I was probably asking my mom, hey, what's this word? What's this word? What's this word? But in there, they had a big list. Like, here's something you can do, you know, to pass the time. You can start a collection. And it had had a list of all these different things you could collect. It was like rocks, stamps, bottle caps, bugs, probably. And comic books was on there. Now, my grandparents lived, like, right next door to this little, like, mom and pop corner store that my grandfather used to take me whenever I'd go over there on weekends. And he'd buy me, like, a balsa wood airplane or an ice cream or, you know, something like that. And so I was like, oh, comic books. I know what those are. I've discovered this newfound passion for reading. I can put these two things together, right? Like, I can collect something, and what I collect can be comic books, and then it'll give me something to read. So when I got back from my camping trip, went over there, bought my first comic. I think it was an issue of Super Friends, because much like you guys, I had, you know, watched cartoons. I didn't have Batman the Animated Series or Spider-Man Adventures or X-Men or anything, but I did have the Super Friends. So that's what I watched, and that's what I bought, because that's what I knew off the rack. And from there, I remember I used to choose my comics in the very early days based on the number of characters that were in the books. So I bought, like, a lot of Justice League, Super Friends, Legion of Superheroes, because in my mind, I was like, well, the more characters that are in the book, the more, like, cool new characters I'm going to learn about and the more cool powers I'll get to see. So that's kind of how I justified it, right? And it wasn't until – so that was the summer between my kindergarten and first grade year, so I was only, like, 5 years old. So I think it was about the time I was 7 when I realized – well, wait a second. These, because especially if you read Super Friends, it's they're kind of one and done stories, right? You just read the one issue, and it's, for the most part, that's the story. But when I was in second grade, I was about 7, I think, and I bought an issue of ROM Space Knight number 47, and that was the first comic that I bought where I realized, hey, these are like serialized stories. Like, I need to look for the next issue, and I. From issue 47 of ROM all the way through 75, I bought off the newsstand, never missed an issue. And I started with other titles. Ghost Rider was another one just because he looked so cool. And so, yeah, that was when I really – when I was 7, that's when I really realized, hey, this is a thing. They come out – at the time, I think they came out every Tuesday on the newsstand. And I'd go to, like, the 7-Elevens in town, go to the little farmer's market next to my grandparents' house. That's what it was called, Farmer's Market. And one thing that was kind of special for me that a lot of people didn't have access to, like, I didn't know anything about direct market comic book shops, whatever, for a few more years, probably till I was about in fifth grade. And I went to visit my uncle in another town, and he's like, oh, you like comics? I'll take you to the comic book shop. I'll take you to the comic book store. I'm like, wait, there's a comic book store? And I remember walking in there the first time and being blown away by how many books there were and just being like, oh my God, I can't even pick. But the other thing that was really cool for me was, even though I didn't have a comic book shop close to me and didn't have access to one because I couldn't drive, the guy that owned the 7-Eleven that was like 4 blocks from my house growing up, he was a big comic book fan. And so even though it was just a spinner rack, it wasn't only like newsstand stuff. He got direct edition stuff, like stuff that you really couldn't get from 7-Eleven typically. Like, I remember seeing Watchmen on the rack, and I didn't buy it, unfortunately, but I did buy Vigilante, which was a very mature title for the time. You know, you couldn't find that. That was a direct market title only, comic book shop only. So that did give me an advantage. I was exposed to some stuff I might normally not have been. I think it was 13 when I started reading Vigilante. And yeah, I mean, there was like nudity and mature language and everything. And I was like, that was another kind of awakening for me. It was like that 86, 87 period of time when comics were kind of maturing with like the Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen and everything. And Vigilante for me was really the one, like Killing Joke was for Manny, where I was like, man, these things are so much more than just like superheroes and as my grandfather used to call them, funny books. You know, you can really tell some in-depth story and get into character and emotion and adult themes. And that was when I kind of realized it. So that's my secret origin. I know it's not anywhere near as kind of influenced by pop culture as all you guys with the cartoons and everything. It's actually collect the comics because of a Charlie Brown library book. So kind of funny in that way. All right. Well, I did mention trivia earlier. So I have myself here, if you can hear it, an old fashioned that I am partaking of refreshment. I'm presuming everyone else has some sort of refreshment as well.
I have a beer, and Andrew has a Bud Light Lime.
I have a Probiscus Simcoe.
He's a Bud Light Orange. He's a Bud Light Orange.
But you still have those Bud Light Oranges?
I told you I was going to make Andrew finish them.
It's disgusting. Manny, what are you partaking of? That looks like Jack Daniels. Why are you? That's just
Jack Daniels Tennessee Honey.
All right, everybody, we are going to do some trivia here in honor of the 400th episode, bringing back a segment. As I said, we did trivia in the past with New 52 Trivia. I even did some episodes when I was flying solo for a little while with this. So I've got this Marvel hardback book that has a bunch of questions and multiple choice answers, and it has built into the book a little thing where you can – like a little electronic interface where you can push A, B, C, or D, and then it tells you, gives you the question number. Like you push the button, it gives you a question number. You go and look up that question, and then you read it, and then you choose A, B, C, or D, and you find out if you're right or wrong. I've done episodes in the past where I did that. I'd see how many questions I can get right, and every time I missed one, I'd take a shot. If you go listen to those episodes, they're pretty funny because you can tell as I miss more and more questions, just how much I've had to drink. So, so let's.
I wonder what that's like.
Yeah, they're pretty fun episodes. I'm telling you that Marvel trivia book is pretty tough, man. Some of those questions, most of those questions, I'd say are pretty hardcore. So we're gonna start with Manny because he's listed first. So obviously the question or the character he chose to have us ask questions about is Batman. So fire away. And every time he is this, there's no peer pressure. I'll just say that if I miss a question, I'm going to take a big swig of my drink. Whether or not you guys do is entirely up to you. So go ahead, Nick, fire away. What do you have for Manny?
I guess mine actually relates to a different Batman character. I didn't know how hard or how easy to go, so I went really hard. I know I'm going to get destroyed by your guys' question.
Mine are pretty easy, I feel like. As far as
Batman's associates, what is Dick Grayson's middle name?
Oh, I don't even know that.
I got a clue. It's his dad's first name.
I feel like when I hear it, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, of course that's it.
Just guess names at this point.
Again? We good?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Richard something.
Richard something Grayson. I don't know.
Guess a name.
Sorry.
At least guess a name.
Guess a name. It's a common name.
It's a common name? Richard. Wow, I'm no clue.
John.
What?
Richard John Grayson.
Richard.
His middle name is John.
Because his dad's name is John, I guess. I didn't know if it'd be too hard or too easier.
That was pretty tough. I don't think it was unfair, but that was a pretty tough question. I didn't sound as familiar to me as I expected it to. So okay.
Yeah. Curious to you.
Regular name. Oh, not like Thomas or Martha. Nothing important.
Yeah. I guess Martha.
Martha would have been good.
All right, Andrew, you're up next. What do you have for?
All right. What Batman villain? Who had the previous job of a zoologist?
Of a zoologist.
Man, you guys, mine's going to be so easy in comparison to this.
I'm really supposed to go. I could be like, what are his parents' names?
I would say
what falls to the ground when his mom gets shot every time.
Zoologist. That was. Let's see. Okay, woman, not two phase, not. Play phase, not.
It's Alfred last name.
I could have gotten easy.
He's searching it. Research into animals that made him turn into the villain he became.
Oh, that's a good clue.
It's not Mad Bat, is it?
It's Mad Bat. Kirk Langs. Mad
Bat. Look at that. He pulled it out with a little bit of
I don't remember him being a zoologist though, but
no, I didn't either. But he said it was him being a zoologist that kind of led to, and I was thinking, could it be Catman? I still didn't connect with Man Bat, so I still would have missed it.
Animal Man, no.
All right, Manny. Mine's gonna be like a lot easier in comparison to this. It may trip you up. There's a little bit of a trick to it. So my question is kind of multi-part. So name all the Robins in chronological order.
Oh, don't do that.
So, but we won't count Carrie Kelly, who is from the Dark Knight Returns. We won't count her, but name the rest of the Robins in chronological order.
Oh, come on.
So Dick Grayson.
Yep.
Jason Todd.
Yep.
I can never remember Red Robin's name.
He's like one of the most popular Robins somehow.
Tim Drake.
Yes.
Then obviously my favorite, Damian.
Damian Wayne.
And I don't know if you want to count Duke as a Robin.
Duke is not a Robin. He's never Robin. But you're still wrong.
What?
Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, and I had a feeling that this might get you. You forgot Stephanie Brown. Stephanie Brown.
Nah.
Yep. Stephanie Brown. I don't think was she did. Robin. Yes, she was Robin. She was officially a Robin. And then she got stripped of the mantle by Batman for not following orders, and then went into the Batcave and stole a Robin outfit anyway and got herself killed. This was all right before the Flashpoint event, and then Damian Wayne. So,
nah.
I give you partial credit.
You set me up for failure.
I think that a lot of people forget about Stephanie Brown, but she was a Robin, so
there may be a reason for it.
That's what made that a great question. All right, Nick, are you ready? Do you have a full beer? So when you go 0-3,
he doesn't. He's gonna have to refill.
Yeah, I'm gonna just start.
All right, Manny, fire away at Nick. What do you have for him?
So, what name did Captain America change?
Yeah, we should say his character is Captain.
Oh America. Yeah, Captain America.
Yeah.
What name did Captain America change to? In the 70s, when he was not unhappy with U.S. politics.
Oh, easy one.
Nomad.
Hey, they're easy. Ding,
ding, I have the first comic where he did that. The original Secret Empire, right?
Right, the original Secret Empire. Was it 2 seconds?
Andrew bought it for me. It's it's Captain America and the Falcon. It's a few issues of that.
Yeah, is it like 276, I think? Somewhere.
It's on the shelf. I have that collection. Because it has the same cover as one of the images from Secret Empire.
All right, Andrew, fire away at Nick.
All right.
Thank you.
Which Captain American villain was formerly employed as a bellhop?
Oh, that's an easy one, too.
Tell me it's not the jumping dude.
If you don't know who Batroc the Leaper is, you're a fool, but it's not.
Bellhop? On a Zemo, I have like early... I don't know who the hell. I have no idea.
Oh, that it's the Red Skull, man. Come on. The most classic.
Yeah.
At least Hitler was like a painter. The Red Skull was just a bellhop.
That's how the Red Skull met Hitler and became the Red Skull. He was a bellhop. And the Hitler checked into the hotel and was like, I like the cut of your jib. Come and become
experiment on you.
Red Skull. Exactly. Okay.
Dang, that's
a good feeling. I have a feeling you're going to tie Manny because I don't think you're going to get my question right.
Your questions are meant to trip people up.
No, well, but here's the thing. When I was in Denver last month, I had a conversation about this exact thing with Nick, and I'm pretty sure I told him the answer, but I'm also pretty sure he won't remember.
He might remember
the conversation, but I don't think he'll remember the answer. So my question is, what is Captain America's shield made of?
It's a combination vibranium adamantium alloy.
He got it right. You were paying attention.
It's because the movies is just vibranium. You told me that, and I was like, whoa, this changes my entire reality.
Apparently, that stuck with you. Yeah, so it's a vibranium proto adamantium alloy. So this metallurgist was charged with creating a shield for. Actually, he was supposed to just be making this indestructible metal to help out the U.S. Armed Forces, and he was testing with the hatch to a tank, and that's why it's the shape that it is. And he fell asleep trying to mix this vibranium with an iron, special super hard iron alloy, which was an early version of adamantium. And somehow, while he was asleep, something happened, and the vibranium and the adamantium finally managed to combine together and form the shield. But he was never able to replicate it. But due to that experiment and what happened, that eventually led to him creating adamantium. So, and there's a great story in Captain America 304 about Captain America's shield. If you ever want to read more about it, I really recommend that that issue. So not bad, not bad. Two out of three, not bad. Okay, so I guess Andrew's up next.
Now here comes that 0 for 3. Here we go.
All right, go ahead.
No, mine's real easy.
And so Andrew's character is Venom. So fire away there, Manny.
Mine's real easy. Might as well give him the point. Venom's suit is immune to what? To which of Spider-Man's abilities?
Spidey sense.
Yeah, ding, that was ding, easy. Ding.
Yeah, that was
good work.
That was pretty easy. So
thanks for the thanks for the easy one.
I don't know jack about Venom, so like I was like, I don't know.
All right, Nick, go ahead.
Mine specially suited to Andrew because I've told him the answer before. I don't know if he remembers.
Well, I hardly ever listen.
Yeah, exactly. Payback. Okay. Who is the second Venom, aka, in other words, the third person to wear the symbiote after Peter Parker? So there's Parker, Brock, and then who wore an X in the comics?
I'm not even 100% sure I know this, but I think I do.
I don't think Andrew does.
He looks like a deer in the headlights. Look at him.
It's we're going to go with,
I told you before, too.
It's not Aunt May.
Everyone's worn it at this point, so it's not. I can guess anyone, and I'll be right at some point in time. But
who's the third? I said.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's a villain.
It's Cletus Cassidy.
No, that'll be a different suit.
Well, if he somehow falls, I don't know.
Matt Gorgon, the Scorpion.
Oh,
the third person. The second Venom. The third person to wear the symbiote.
I would have got that wrong, too, because I would have said Flash Thompson. I thought it was Flash.
No, see, he would know that. That's why he knew
that.
I knew
he was going to try and get me there.
Because he's the next main one, but there's a big old storyline with Matt Gorgon.
I was going to actually ask that question, but I thought it was too easy.
Yeah, based on your answer for that one, Andrew, I have a feeling mine's going to be really easy for you. It's another two-part question. Name the first offspring of Venom, and who did it bond with?
I assume it was Carnage with Cletus Cassidy.
Yeah, look at that. Two out of three for him.
And yeah. All right. I can take two out of three.
The two he answered were lightning quick. Now, I am by far the most experienced comic reader of all four of us. Yet I picked the character that is been around for the longest period of time, and you guys could really like, you know, ask me about like blue kryptonite or rainbow kryptonite or something like completely crazy from like the Silver Age or Golden Age that I'm going to have no idea. So I too fear that I may go 0-3, even though I'm a giant Superman fan. So hopefully one of you had mercy and gave me a softball. So
I gave you a softie.
All right.
I gave you a softie too.
Okay, Manny, let's hear it. What do you got?
All right. Name the plant that Superman keeps in the that creates dreams of a person's perfect life while sucking away his psychic.
Oh my god. Yeah, it's from Superman Annual 11 by Alan Moore for the man who has everything. And I think it's called why am I second guessing myself? I want to say it's called the Black Rose.
That's not it. You're wrong.
No way. There's no way I stopped you on that one. I really thought you were just going to say it.
And I just came across it the other day, actually. And I remember thinking, I know it's black. It's got the word black in the title.
Do you want to know the irony of it?
What's that?
You just said the word a few seconds ago.
All right. What? It's black something. I don't.
You just said the word.
What is it?
It's Black Mercy.
Black Mercy. That's right. Black Mercy.
Did you know that, Andrew?
I just knew it was black something. All right, Nick. Fire away.
Okay. I'll make sure that
you could have asked me who put it on his chest. I could have got that.
Yeah, that was easy, Mongol.
Yeah, I knew half of it. I knew black. I can't believe I forgot Black Mercy. I'll never forget it again.
Which of Superman's rogues gallery, the villain named Oswald Loomis? Who is he?
Oswald Loomis. That's the prankster.
Yes, the original prankster from Action Comics number 51.
Yeah. Anybody who wears a tweed jacket and has a giant beer belly has to be named Oswald. So, all right. Perhaps I have two. We'll go 2-3. We'll see if Andrew's is really a softie for me. Let's hear it, Andrew.
It's a softball, but I'll give you a bonus question after the softball. All right. Which Superman villain was previously employed by NASA?
Oh, Hank Henshaw.
Yes.
Cyborg Superman.
Who's that?
All right, yeah, that's
the Cyborg Superman. But for your bonus question, please pronounce correctly the name of the imp from the fifth dimension.
Mixes Piddalick.
That's wrong. It's pronounced completely different than that.
There is some debate online as to how it is pronounced. You are correct.
So we tied 2-2.
Yeah, 2-2. Manny bringing up the rear. He's going to have to rethink his whole Batman fandom. So,
no, I got it right. Stephanie Brown's not Robin.
Fair enough. All right, let's start talking about the reason that we're here. Beginner's Guide to Collecting and Reading Comics. So I really think that one of the ways to, if you decide, okay, I want to start collecting comics instead of just kind of falling into it like I did, is really to take kind of a page out of what you guys did, right? Have a goal. Like, why are you collecting? Is it because you want to read the stories? You know, maybe you've gone to see the movies and, you know, you love the stories that are told and you realize that there is a wealth of stories and a wealth of just material out there, right? Like, these movies last like 2 hours, right? Maybe three. And they draw from decades and decades of history. And Nick always gives me a bad time for like kind of looking down on the movies, and I don't necessarily look down on them. It does bother me a little bit that they change things, but I understand it's a different medium and you have to change things in order to get a complete story. But here's my problem. So many people go and they watch the movies and they love the movies and they think the movies are all there is, right? It's like the end all be all. And they've seen every Marvel movie and they think because they've seen every Marvel movie that they're Marvel experts, and they've invested so much time and effort and energy into understanding these stories. They've never bothered to go and pick up a comic. And I would challenge any of you out there who fall into this boat that, yeah, maybe you don't like to read. But if you want great stories, if you enjoy the movies because they are great stories, there is so much more out there. there's so many other great stories, even beyond these superhero stories that seem to be really the focus of the movies. There's horror, there's Western, there's crime, there's science fiction, there's fantasy, there's all this wealth of stories out there to be discovered. And in a way, I'm kind of envious of you because you get to go and enjoy and discover all these stories in these worlds for the first time and have the excitement of discovery. So if you want to get into comics because you've seen all the movies and you just want more of that, more of those characters, more of those stories, then I think that, as I said, the sky's the limit, right? There's tons of good stories out there. We're going to recommend some in this episode. You can also just go online and Google, best comic stories all time, top 100 comic stories all time, top 50 all time, top 50 Superman stories, top 50 Batman stories, top 50 stories for a new comic reader to discover. There are any myriad of ways to go and discover. If the reason you're collecting is to read the stories, I think that's the best and most pure reason to want to enjoy comics. And I really think, the sky's the limit. What are your thoughts on that, Manny?
Well, it's up to the publishers to really kind of coincide both stories and movies, because I know with Marvel, for example, it's a little difficult to get to what they're doing in films and what they're doing in movies. But I mean, you just need to start off with whatever character you're a fan of. I know that's what I did. I started with Batman and then just branched out off of there. And then once you do that, you start branching out into different books by same artist or different same writers. And then from there you find out that you like certain characters, and then the sky's the limit at that point. And so as far as starting out, just like with food, I'd say start off with something you're comfortable with. Like if you love cheeseburgers, order the cheeseburger off the menu and then venture out. So if you're a big fan of Batman and his rogues gallery, Spider-Man and his rogues gallery, start off with Spider-Man, and maybe you find out that there's another character that makes a cameo appearance that you want to read about, or you really enjoy the series and you want to continue reading the book, reading another book by the same writer. So I mean, just there's just so many ways to go about it, and with so many of these studios now picking up different comic book properties. I mean, even Men in Black was a comic book property. All the DC movies, the Marvel movies, Valiant stuff is making its way out. I mean, Image has like Gideon Falls that is going to come out. There's some books that haven't even hit the stands yet that have already been picked up for development. So I mean, it's just out there so much that just start with what you're comfortable with, what you like, and then branch out from there. It's real easy.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. Keep in mind, though, if you are a fan of the movies, and that's kind of your gateway, these aren't the same stories as the movies. So you can't go into it like, well, that's not like the movie. I'm going to give up.
Yeah, that's you have a really good point, because, for example, with Civil War, that's one of my biggest issues, and I've ranted about that a billion times of how that's, I don't consider that film to be Civil War because of the events that happen in the book. So also understand that the films are made for about 1.5 to 2 hours, 2.5 hours maybe max. So directors have to take studio directors have to take liberties with what they want in the film or what they don't, and they also have to take into account sequels and big wigs in the conference rooms that want certain things in the book and the movie that don't necessarily pertain to the books, but it looks good in the film, or they think it looks good in the film. So I mean, like, just know that this is the source material. There's no movie without without Stan Lee, without Dan Slott, without Jack Kirby, without all these people who set the foundation for these characters, who really took, I mean, just months and years to really develop and characterize all these different heroes for you to then be able to enjoy them on the screen. In some cases, just be completely torn apart and getting something else, a la your favorite film, Man of Steel,
yep.
which took what you read as a fan of Superman, you read for so long, and flipped the script on it, and it just kind of upset you. So then when you go back to reading it from a film, you kind of get the awe. You don't get the same Superman, but.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that debate, but
no,
I would argue that you do need to be true to the character. I mean, you can change the story around. Obviously, you got to make it fit the time frame. Maybe you want to modernize it, but you do need to be true to the character. So, Nick, do you have anything to add about collecting? The reason that you want to start collecting is reading the stories?
Yeah, it's mostly reading the stories for me, but I'm also like, I need to have a physical copy of anything I own. So I buy the books so that I can read it physically. And then even if they're damaged by myself or Andrew before he gives them to me, I then bag and board all the books just because I have them.
So you would not be somebody who would just buy digitally. Got to have the physical copy.
Got to have the physical copy. If it's a book I really care about, I have the physical copy.
Andrew, this seems to be the reason why you started collecting. You wanted more of the stories.
Yeah, I'm a story guy through and through. Have in every facet, comics and outside of comics, I love a good story, and so I pretty much only buy for the story. But I'm also only buy physical copy, but that's because I hate reading things on a screen. But that's the real reason
that's part of it.
Buy physical copies. And if I'm buying a physical copy, I might as well save them all so that I can now, you know, give those to someone else the way my dad gave me his, because I love them. Why can't I do the exact same thing?
I would love to have physical copies of everything I read, but when you start getting up into the, you know, tens of thousands of books, then it starts becoming
just horrible. I've got an attic that has nothing right now in it but a couple long boxes, so I'm not too worried about it.
Well, I've got about 50 long boxes, so and no attic to put them in. So
you gotta get an attic.
And Andrew has a garage you can fit a comic book store into.
Gotta get it. Okay, let's move on here. Next reason maybe you want to collect. Maybe you're into art. Maybe you're into art and that's why you want to collect. I think this is a much rarer reason to collect comics, because obviously it doesn't involve reading them. But there are any number of comic book artists that are working in the industry today that you could ask them about, hey, how'd you get into comics? And they're like, yeah, I got into it from an artistic perspective. So there's no reason why that's not valid. There's comic book art has never looked better in my mind than it does right now. The printing process, the paper quality, the color process, the quality of the paper, the quality of the covers, the structure of the story, the way the stories are told now, they tend toward much larger panels, more splash pages, more finished art. The art is a lot tighter and cleaner than it used to be. So there are plenty of books out there that come to mind. Anything by Lee Bermejo, Isola, which we'll talk about in the other podcast that comes out today, New Comic Book Day, which is a beautiful book. I mean, anything by Liam Sharp, Nicola Scott. I mean, you can go back and listen to our top nine artists episode. I mean, there are so many absolutely spectacular artists out there working today. It's a completely legitimate reason to collect, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with buying books because you like the art and following artists and never even reading the stories. If that's what you like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. You have anything to add, Andrew or Nick, about collecting comics from an art perspective?
I mean, there are books that I buy just for art, but it's certainly not why I got into it, but it's definitely contributed to my collection.
I bought a variant or two, but that's about as far as I go.
So are there certain artists, Andrew, that if they do a book, you'll buy it regardless of the story because it's them?
I will jump onto any John Romita Jr. I see. I will immediately pick that up and add it to the collection, which I know you love to hear.
Oh, God, no.
Hey, man, there are plenty of people that are in that same boat with you. I'm not going to rock that boat. I myself will buy any Mark Brooks cover that I see within reason. I mean, he does do some like one of 100 tiered variants that, you know, I'm not going to spend $100 on a book, a brand new book that's just coming out. But if it's got Lee Bermejo art, I'm in. If it's a Mark Brooks cover, I'm in. And then just based also Art Germ, Stanley Luau, I buy a lot of his covers. But a lot, I mean, there's a lot of artists that I enjoy, but I maybe don't pick up every book they do or every cover they do. But on a cover by cover basis, I might, you know, like if I see the variant and I like it, see the regular and I like it, I'll pick that up. Kenneth Rocafort's another artist whose work I really enjoy and pick up a lot. What about you, Manny? I know there's a few artists out there that you will pick up if they're. Nicola Scott's another one that if she's doing a book, I'll pick it up.
If you listen to this podcast, you know the first name that I'm gonna say,
Jason, and that's gonna be
Jason Fabok. I've been telling you guys ever since this guy's been on Detective. You know, I remember the first time I brought him up, and you're like, really? You think he's gonna be great based off of a Commissioner Gordon cover? I was like, yes. And ever since then, he's been amazing. Jason Fabok, Clay Mann is another one. And like you, Lee Bermejo, and Liam Sharp, definitely. But the one thing I will say about art is that there's some books where the art will turn me off on the story because it's so distracting to see sometimes when they do multiple artists on a book. Or maybe the artist isn't as good as it could have been on the book. I mean, maybe it's like rushed or something. It looks rushed, feels rushed. Or maybe it's just not colored correctly or incorrectly. So, art is important, but it's not everything, because I did not like the art at all on Clone. But the story was so good that I could put up with it.
I thought you grew to like the art eventually.
No, it was the story that was so good that I could put up with it.
Yeah, I am more tolerant of bad art than I used to be, or art that I don't particularly like. Used to be early on, I'd drop a book from one issue to the next. But now, because I tend to mostly follow writers that mm-hmm. I enjoy, I'm more willing to put up with art. And I'm not even going to say it's bad art, because that's the other thing with knowledge and time of what makes good art. You can start to realize that even though you don't like a particular artist, whether it's because of his style or his rendering or whatever it is, you can still recognize the things that he does well. So, you know, maybe you don't like his figure drawing, but his expressions are really good. Or maybe you don't like the way he shades things, but... or his proportions seem off to you, but his panel layouts on the page are really awesome. So
that's
always, I feel like there's always something that I can see in an artist that, for the most part, that makes me feel like, I'm going to go ahead and stick with it. That being said, another thing that sometimes keeps me going is the fact that I do tend to get a lot of books for review copies purposes, and so for that reason it helps me, you know. I'm not going to stop reading a book if I'm not even paying for it, so that helps as well. So another reason that people collect comics is for investment purposes. This is also certainly legitimate, but it's not necessarily for somebody who's on a small budget. You can make money on comics. Certainly graded comics is a big thing now. For those that aren't familiar with graded comics, there's a couple of different companies out there. They'll grade your comic on what condition it's in. And usually the top grade a comic can get is 9.8. There are a few 10 comics out there that get graded as a 10. That's an absolute perfect comic in every way. And a lot of times it doesn't even come off the printing press as a 10. There's going to be little folds or micro creases, or the paper didn't get cut exactly right, or it's not perfectly centered. It's very rare to get a 10. So most of the time a 9.8 is going to command a premium price. And you can buy low on those and sell high, but it certainly isn't as easy to invest in comics now as say it was 15 or even 30 years ago, because now there's so many eyes on it because of movies and TV shows, like we've said. So, so for that reason, it's a much tougher thing, to invest. And I would say if that's the reason you want to start collecting, you really got to do your homework. There's plenty of, websites out there that will give you, information about that, and they're more expert about it than I am. That could be like a 2-hour podcast in and of itself. So we're not going to go further into detail on that. And then the last thing I'll mention is topical collections, which we kind of touched on already. Topical collection is you pick a topic, and this is why I'm collecting, right? So I pick a writer, and I'm going to collect everything the writer writes. Pick an artist, I'm going to collect everything the artist draws. I'm going to pick a character and I'm going to just read that character. So Batman, Avengers, Justice League, Spider-Man, Superman, whatever it is. Or maybe you only want to read comics about, you know, My Little Pony. Or maybe you only want to read comics about people that have red hair. Or maybe you only want to read Western comics. Whatever the particular thing you're drawn to in other medium, if you're looking to get into comics, that's always a great way. So I love horror movies. Let me, you know, Google best horror comics. I really love comedies. Let me go Google, you know, humor comics, things like that. So topical collection is a really easy way to get in. And again, I think that it's the way a lot of people start. And again, it's really easy. Best Batman stories, best Superman stories. Just get on Google. Google's your friend. And you can find those and you can, you know, start, you know, pick one, pick it up digitally, pick it up in trade. Check it out and see if comics are really for you. Next thing we're going to talk about is format. There's 4 different ways that you can read comics currently. There's monthlies. Those are the books that come out every Wednesday. The single issues, they tend to be about 20, 22 pages. They're anywhere from $3 to $4 to $5. And that's the smallest amount of story for your dollar. It's the most expensive way to read comics. You can also read trades. They're sometimes known as graphic novels, but there is a difference. What a trade paperback is it collects one story arc of those monthlies, and they tend to be from anywhere from $10 to $20. And it usually collects 5 or 6 monthlies, right? So say that you want to read the latest Batman arc. If you picked it up off the stands at $4 a piece, 6 issues, 6 times 4, $24, right? So you can pick up the trade and it's $19, or if you're ordering it from a discount place like Discount Comic Book Service, you often can get it for $10. So instead of spending $24, you're only spending $10, you're getting the same amount of story. You will sometimes miss out on any kind of extras. Sometimes they'll put some extras that are in the books, but sometimes there's also extras that are in the trade paperbacks. Sometimes you miss out on covers. There are differences, right? And the other thing is you're waiting a lot longer for the story. If you're only reading Batman, you know, every 6 issues, you're getting a bigger chunk of the story at the same time, but then you're also having to wait longer until the next trade comes out. Graphic novel is very similar in a format, the way it looks. You know, it's a longer story, it's all together, but a graphic novel is one story all together, and it's usually written to be released in that format. So you can see the difference right there. And a lot of times they're now called original graphic novels because it's a story that's written, you know, 100, 150, 200, 300 pages, and it's written for that format and then is released all at once. It's not serialized on a monthly basis. There's also digital that we talked about, and these are often released on the same day as the print copy. So every Wednesday, you're going to see digital copies of the same books that are out from Marvel, DC. And here's the thing, it's usually the same price on the same day. So you're paying $3, $4, $5 for a digital. And to Nick's point earlier, a lot of people don't like that, especially if you get them from Comixology, because technically you don't own them. You're just leasing them from Comixology. Comixology is now owned by Amazon, so it's unlikely they're going to go out of business and you're going to lose access to that comic. But it is a concern, you know, that risk does exist, technically. The other thing is there's no resale, right? You can't resell a digital comic. Whereas if you're paying $3 for digital, you can read it. You can hand your tablet to your friend and share it that way, but you can't really resell it. Whereas if you're buying the physical copy, then at least you've got something tangible you can resell, maybe. If it, you know, not all comics hold their value. Some of them, you know, you find them in a dollar bin or a quarter bin later on. That's just kind of the nature of the industry. So digital does have its advantages, though, because you can carry around thousands of comics on one tablet. And it's a, you know, it's a lot easier to search through things like that. So the other thing about digital is a lot of times things will go on sale after they've been out for a while. And you can start picking stuff up for 99 cents after it's been out for 3 or 4 months. So you're saving money that way. But again, you're waiting, just like you're waiting with the trade. And then the last way that you can collect comics is subscription, specifically Marvel Unlimited. There's a few other subscription services out there. DC's about to start one up called DC Universe. You pay a flat rate for a subscription, and it has thousands, like Marvel Unlimited has thousands and thousands of comics. You pay, I think it's $9.99 or $14.99 a month, and you get access to all these digital comics. You can read as much or as little of it as you want. And so that's really like the most bang for your buck. But again, it's digital, and some people don't like to read digital. So that's pretty much all the information that you need, I think, about collecting comics. If you have other questions, you can always hit us up on any of our social media sites or shoot us an email. We'd be happy to answer that. Kind of sped through that section because some of us are running a little short on time, and I want to get to the recommendations. So we have recommendations for a few different characters and properties. We're going to give our recommendations, and we'll give a quick explanation why we chose it. And again, these are titles that we feel are good, new reader-friendly titles for these particular properties. So we'll start with Batman. What's your pick for a good Batman story to start with for a new reader, Manny?
Everything. Anything. Just pick something up. No, just kidding. So actually, this was a little bit tough for me to pick, just because there's so many good stories out there that you can start reading. So I wanted to pick something that kind of gave you a good flavor of somebody who was really popular, and then also give you kind of like a crash course introduction on a variety of characters in the Bat family. So I looked no farther than New 52's Batman. Death of the Family. That's it's gonna give you the Joker. It's from issues 13 through 17, the Batman, from New 52, written by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. There's a bunch of tie-ins for it that span from Batgirl, Catwoman, Suicide Squad, Batman and Robin, Detective, Nightwing, Red Hood, and Teen Titans. And basically what this book, the reason I picked this book is because, like I said, it gives you a good introduction to the Bat family, as well as one of Batman's main adversaries, the Joker, and just really how insane he can be. I mean, from the beginning of it, the background of it is the Dollface has removed his face, and they have it at the GCPD. He goes back and gets it, and from the very beginning, he kills 19 police officers, and that's your kickoff of the story. I mean, if that doesn't tell you the guy's crazy, I don't know what will. And then from there, kind of the premise of it is the Joker kind of believes that the entire family is holding him back. And so you get to meet Damian and everybody, Nightwing, everyone else. And I think it's perfect to get started.
Nick, what do you have up next?
All right, I got Batman Long Halloween, written by Jeff Loeb, artist Tim Sale, and colors by Jeff Gregory Wright. If you've never seen the movies at all, this is a great comic to start with, because it's the story of Harvey Dent, one of the most tragic Batman characters of all time, retold not within canon, but kind of a retelling in the style of Batman Year One. Also, like, if you have seen the movies, this is a good one to start with, because it might remind you of The Dark Knight, as far as the storyline concerning Batman, Commissioner Gordon, and Harvey Dent is very similar to that movie. So that's my ultimate pick for Batman.
What do you have, Andrew?
I recommend Batman, The Court of Owls by Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo on pencils, Jonathan Glapion on ink. Maybe Glapion?
Yeah, that's how you say the name.
Anyway, it's the
Batman story that launched the new 52. And I think it's a great way to launch into Batman, because I think if you're just a person who lives in this culture, you're probably familiar with some of the basic Batman trappings, Gotham and Pennyworth. These are things that you just know going
Pennyworth.
In. Yeah, Alfred.
Pennywise? Oh, Penny. Oh, you're right. Oh, okay. God. I'm being the idiot.
All right.
These are things that you know going in, and I think it really just expands that that mythos and really makes Gotham come alive and kind of makes Batman the world real. So, and it's also great. It's the beginning of the New 52, and then you can read the entire Scott Snyder Capello run, and it is all fantastic. And it includes that death of the family.
Two it's just Snyder a great way Capullo to start. Picks. Wow. So my pick's Batman Hush. Kind of for the same reasons you guys gave on yours. Manny mentioned about death of the family, really giving us an introduction to all the different members of the Batman family. Hush really gives a look into the whole rogues gallery. I mean, you've got Riddler and Joker and Poison Ivy and everybody. It's written by Jeff Loeb. The art is by Jim Lee. Inks by Scott Williams, colors by Alex Sinclair, that classic artistic team there. And it's one of the classic Batman runs of all time. The regular issues can be a little tough to find, can be a little pricey, but they're constantly reprinting trade paperbacks, and I think there's even a black and white pencils-only version coming out soon. So it's really easy to find cheaply in trade, and I think it's an incredible story. So. All right, moving on. Next, we'll go to Spider-Man. Nick, you go first. What's your pick for a Spider-Man story to start with?
I didn't know with a good just single story to start with, and I've only really read the recent stuff. So I decided to do maybe a good introductory book for a lot of Spider-Man fans who know his general story. Maybe you're also bigger Deadpool fans, just in case, since they're both super hot right now. So I chose Spider-Man, Deadpool, specifically the plot Itsy Bitsy, which is issues 9 through 10, 13 through 14, and 17 through 18, because that book is so inconsistent and jumps around story-wise. Writer is Joe Kelly, artist is Ed McGuinness. It's basically Spider-Man and Deadpool have a daughter, as in she's a clone of both of them, and she calls them both Daddy, and she has both of their strengths but none of their weaknesses, and Deadpool is trying to actually keep Spider-Man from killing at a certain point. And vice versa, they're actually kind of reversing roles because Spider-Man's so fed up with it, and she's almost invincible and slaughtering them every time. So my favorite buddy cop comic is those two together, and I wish the movie gods would come together to make that.
Yeah, I think that Joe Kelly, from what a lot of people know of Deadpool, he's really a product of Joe Kelly. I know Rob Liefeld created him, but when you talk about like breaking the fourth wall and having a zany personality, that was all Joe Kelly's doing. Liefeld created him, but he really didn't do much with him. Really, it's Joe Kelly we have to thank for a lot of the personality that moviegoers would recognize in Deadpool. What's your pick for Spider-Man, Andrew?
I went with Spider-Man character-focused book, Carnage USA.
I almost selected all your choices, by the way.
Carnage goes to a small town in Colorado. It terrorizes everything. I think it's great because it introduces you into more symbiotes. And that's the best part of the Spider-Verse, I think. So I think the more they're involved, the better the story. And I think as soon as you can get introduced to them, the better. And this is a good way to have some of the most fun ones you can get, because you got Flash Thompson in this story, and you've got Spider-Man, and you've got Carnage. And that's just... Those three together, that's the dream team.
And the real reason you picked the book? Because it's set in Colorado?
It doesn't hurt.
We both love this book. There's a scene where Carnage had people picking their teeth out of their mouth.
I mean, the real reason I picked this book is because you had already selected the one that I was actually interested in,
Ultimate Spider-Man. Ultimate Spider-Man. I picked a long run. I did that on a few of these. So numbers 1 through 111, which is actually the longest run that two creators have ever done on a book. Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley together relaunched Spider-Man, brought him to the modern era in 2000. So instead of Peter Parker being a photographer for the Daily Bugle, he's a webmaster. And the 11-page story that Stan Lee and Steve Ditko told in Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Fantasy, rather, 15, Bendis takes 7 issues to tell. So it's more detailed. It's just Spider-Man updated for the modern world. And it was very popular. Inks by Art Taber, colors by various colorists over the period of time the book went. And the reason that I picked those particular issues, though, is because that was the Bagley Bendis run. The title continues on past that. But I think that picking these up in trade, you're going to recognize a lot of things from the Spider-Man movies, because a lot of that stuff was updated as well. And I think it works really, really well. And it's kind of how Bendis really made his name, was this title, Ultimate Spider-Man. And just as as kind of an honorable mention, I'll say the McFarlane era from Amazing Spider-Man issue 298 to 328. That's kind of what vaulted Todd McFarlane to like superstardom, to where he was able to create Spawn and launch Image as one of the founders. So what do you have for Spider-Man, Manny?
Well, we haven't read much Spider-Man. So, but the one Spider-Man run that I couldn't put down when I started it was Dan Slott's Superior Spider-Man, with artwork by Ryan Stegman, Humberto Ramos, Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Yeah,
and pretty much the premise of this is that Otto Octavius and Peter Parker have switched consciousness, I guess. And in that time span, Otto Octavius died, but with Peter's consciousness. So Peter Parker's still alive, but Otto Octavius in his body. And so he decides that he's going to be a better Spider-Man than Peter Parker ever was. And it really follows that story. I really enjoyed it. 33 issues. And I highly recommend it. Maybe read one of these other guys' picks first. But eventually do get to Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's a great story. I agree. Before we move on to Superman, I did want to mention, I did have an honorable mention for Batman too. I don't think you can go wrong with Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli's Year One, which is kind of a modern retelling of Spider-Man, or of Batman's origin, rather. And that one's always in print too. And it always is on the like best-selling trade paperbacks every month, so it must be good. All right, Andrew, you go first. Superman, your favorite character. What do you have for Superman?
I have one of the most beautiful books ever written and drawn. It comes together so wonderfully. It's All-Star Superman. It's by Grant Morrison. He's the writer. And let me say very plainly, this is the only Grant Morrison book I would ever recommend for anyone ever.
See me? This is me agreeing with you 100%. Yeah. The only Grant Morrison book I've ever
read. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. But so forget everything you know about Grant Morrison, because this is actually incredible, unlike all the rest of his work.
It actually makes sense.
It boils Superman down to his essence, and it's the perfect Superman story. And it's a great jumping off point, great staying point, great ending point. It's a great book. I couldn't recommend it more.
Yeah, it's 12 issues, and you don't need to read anything before or after. It's completely self-contained, and plus there's Super Lois, so that's a great pick. That would have been my second pick for sure. And the only reason I didn't pick it is because I didn't want to pick a Grant Morrison book, because I just do not like the guy's work. So, all right, I'll go next. I picked Man of Steel. And this is the first Man of Steel 6-issue miniseries from John Byrne, spinning out of the Crisis on Infinite Earths event in 1986. And this is really when they kind of made Superman a little more relatable. They kind of depowered him. He couldn't move planets anymore, and he wasn't completely this overpowered superhero where you had a hard time even writing stories about him, because how do you defeat a guy who's all powerful? And so Byrne really humanized him. He also handled the artwork. The inks are by Dick Giordano, and the colors are by Tom Zayuko. But it's a great story, and it leads into Byrne's run on Superman. That's classic stuff. So I think if you're looking for a place to start with modern Superman, this is exactly where you'd want to start. What about you, Manny? What's your pick for Superman?
My pick was a combination of Rebirth's Action Comics by Dan Jurgens and Superman by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. Just because it's you know, I didn't read a lot of Superman before, but with these two runs, I mean, it was just done so well with the action, starting with him fighting Doomsday. So it's something a little bit classic, but I just love the dynamic between Clark, Lois, and Jonathan. I mean, the way that they wrote out those stories. And I mean, there's even one issue in the Superman run where they just go to the fair. Nothing really happens, and it's great. It's done really, really well. So as far as getting Superman as a character in a completely, I think that the combination of those two is what you want to pick up to start off on a Superman book.
Yeah, great pick. Moving on.
I definitely agree with that one as well. Yeah. And that fair issue is one of my favorite comics in years.
Yeah,
it's a good one. It's a really good one.
Yeah, who would ever thought the Superman family book? So, all right, moving on next, Captain America. I picked the Mark Gruenwald era. Again, you know, we want to talk about long runs. So Mark Gruenwald was a writer and an editor for Marvel for many, many years. It's one of my regrets that I didn't start going to conventions sooner and get a chance to meet him, because unfortunately he passed away at a relatively young age. But he was a very prolific writer in the 80s and 90s. So from issue 337 all the way up to 443, this guy wrote every issue of Captain America. I mean, that's over 10 years. And so that, to me, I mean, not all of it's great. It starts getting a little or a lot 90s toward the end of it. So, you know, you can start reading it and go as long until you think the quality starts to diminish. But it's really incredible. Some great artists worked with him on the run. Paul Neary, Mike Zeck did a lot of the covers. Ron Lim did a lot of the issues in there. Dave Hoover, some other artists. So it's really, really classic Captain America stuff. If you like the Chris Evans portrayal of Captain America, you will like this story. It's not overly preachy. Cap has his classic costume, not the one based on what he looks like in the movies where he's got like pouches and funky looking chainmail. It's the old school classic costume. It looks really great. And I did put in the show notes, I actually put 304 to 306 and then 307 on. I don't know why I think I said 337, but it's 307 to 443. But the reason I put 304, 305, and 306, those are actually by Mike Carlin, but they fit in real well with what Gruenwald does. And 304 is that super cool issue about his shield, and 5 and 6 are a crossover with Captain America and Captain Britain, so those are really cool too. So yeah, I recommend 304 to 443, really cool Serpent Society, and there's one where Captain America has a war on drugs and he actually gets rid of the super soldier serum because technically it's a drug, like a performance enhancing drug. And he doesn't have powers anymore because he gets the like a blood transfusion and gets rid of it because it's a drug. I told you, very 90s, right? So what does he do to keep being Captain America? Tony Stark builds him Captain America armor. And it's got this horrible like looking like metal thing that comes across his face and like comes down to a point, and then his eyes are like in these little slits. It looks completely ridiculous. It's really horrible, but also fun in a really cool way. I know Manny doesn't have a Captain America choice because he's never actually read a Captain America run. So we'll move on to Nick, his favorite character of all time, other than Indiana Jones, which, you know, there are Indiana Jones comics, The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. So let us know what your pick is.
I like the Winter Soldier Ultimate Collection, which is Captain America number 1 through 9 and 11 through 14, one of the many times they rebooted the number to number 1. It's by Ed Brubaker. Artists are Steve Epting, Michael Lark, John Paul Leon, and Tom Palmer and Mike Perkins, with colors by Frank DeArmada. I don't know. It's different enough from the movie version. Everyone who's listening to this who hasn't bought comics has seen.
While it's a different enough story, and it's a good story to start on because it both shows flashbacks to the good old days of bucking and cap during World War II alongside how far things have come. And I don't think it's a spoiler to anyone to say that Bucky is involved in the Winter Soldier comic in the present as well. So it's just, you know, it's just a great kind of classic story that became the best Marvel movie and is also just a darn good comic as far as trying to balance Cap on both sides of the past and the present.
Yeah, kind of the last thing Ed Brubaker did for Marvel. Then he moved on to doing creator-owned books about crime and spies and soldiers and, you know, so, I mean, clearly the guy's an incredible writer. And, you know, this is some of the last non-creator-owned work he ever did. So, yeah, he is an incredible writer, really respected in the industry and a legend at this point. So that's a great pick. Andrew, what do you have?
I have Captain America, Castaway in Dimension Z by Rick Remender and artist John Romita Jr.
It's a good one.
I think anyone who's picking up comics should experience some JR art. And what a great place to start in with Captain America. He goes into a different dimension. And I think this story does a good job of showing that his moral compass is unflappable, whether there's an America to protect or not. It kind of goes way beyond that because there is no America. There's only a little boy and not even humans, but he still goes out of his way to make sure that he's protecting these people. And it really kind of shows you the kind of character that Captain America is while you get to look at JR. So it's, you know, it's great.
Yeah. Good pick. Go ahead and give us your Justice League pick as well, Andrew. Oh wait, you don't have one.
I sure don't. Yeah. All of my Justice League picks are basically just Superman books.
Fair enough. Okay. My Justice League book is The New Frontier, written and drawn by Darwin Cook. It's a classic. It's, basically Darwin's take on the Justice League transitioning from the Golden Age to the Silver Age. So Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are meeting the new Flash, the new Green Lantern, and they're inviting them to join the team. And it's just an incredibly well done. And Darwin Cook unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but he was a legend as well. He has his own style. And it's a little bit retro and suits this story that he told perfectly. Some honorable mentions, JLA, Grant Morrison, only because it is like the seven main characters. That's what a lot of people think of as the Justice League. Also, Justice League International, which started in 87, spun out of Crisis. Justice League as a kind of a humor, fun book with the classic Booster Gold, Blue Beetle relationship and Martian Manhunter and Batman knocking Guy Gardner out with one punch, with the famous one punch and the bwahaha laughter. And also The Nail, which is a three-part miniseries by Alan Davis, written and drawn about a world where Ma and Pa can't run over a nail and don't get there in time to find Kal-El as he gets to Earth. And he gets raised by some Amish farmers as a pacifist. And just the way things don't go the way we would want them to, or the way we know them to have gone, because Superman wasn't there to inspire all these other heroes. So, Nick, what do you have for your?
Well, you inspired me to read The Nail. I'm going to go find that.
Yeah, it's really good. Trust me.
We're on Justice League.
Yep.
I actually got Justice League Dark, Into the Dark, which is issues number 1 through 6 of New 52's, which is the first ever time they did Justice League Dark before it comes back without John Constantine, the best part. But it's a fun twist on the Justice League. People hear Dark and they think it's just like, oh, it's the evil version of the Justice League. But no, these are the magic people. John Constantine, Deadman, Zatanna. Like, this is where it's at. The villain, the Enchantress, was wasted as far as the movies go in Suicide Squad, because she's the villain in the first booklet of Justice League Dark, which also features Madame Xanadu and a bunch of other, like, it's a rotating cast. I recommend the entire run because it's all there is to Justice League Dark until it comes back with Wonder Woman instead of John Constantine. But it's a good, like, it's a great magic book to sink your teeth into, that kind of, like, you know, like, you see rotating characters like Orchid and Frankenstein and like Jason Blood and stuff. And it's just a fun book
Yeah, Constantine's supposed to be in the new Justice League Dark too, though. Manny, what do you have for your Justice League pick?
Well, as far as Justice League, I've always felt that Justice League needed to be like epic. It needed to be like, you know, big time, big villain. So for that, my favorite Darkseid story, Justice League story, Darkseid War.
Good.
From New 52, issue 40 to 50. There's a couple of single issues in there, which I actually don't find as important, to be honest. This one's written by Jeff John. Artwork by, oh, that's right, Jason Fabok. A beautiful book to look at, number one. I mean, just so... And the reason why I can recommend this book is that there's so many characters in there. I mean, you have the entire Justice League. You have Darkseid, Steppenwolf. You have Mr. Miracle. You have Barda. You have, I mean, just everyone and anyone in this from DC. More or less makes an appearance. And it's pitting Darkseid versus the Anti-Monitor. I mean, just you cannot get much bigger than that. So, I mean, you can go back and forth and just look at certain panels, look at certain companies, because Facebook does a fantastic job on them. Granted, there was a little bit of a delay when they were coming out because they were taking a little too long. But some of those page growth are amazing. And once you're done with it, it leads you right into Rebirth. So it's a gateway comic, and it's a great one.
Yeah, that's a great pick. And if you need any more convincing, don't forget Batman on the Mobius chair.
That's right.
All right, Manny, give us your pick for Avengers.
For Avengers, I had to pick the current run because this is the first run of the Avengers that I'm reading. So it's written by Jason Aaron and by art by Ed McGuinness. So if you pick this book to start off, you and I can both read it together and you can tell me what you think, because we'll both be starting this Avengers run together. It features a weird team, not like other Avengers teams that I've heard of, but it's characters I like, so I don't care. She-Hulk's in it. Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider, is in it.
What?
Black Panther. Doctor Strange. Tony Stark, Iron Man. And actual Captain America. Odin, Thor. So, and for whatever reason, Captain Marvel's in it, but, you know, we can skip through that. But, I mean, you know, good array of characters that I like currently from Marvel. So it's been okay. It's been pretty good. And it has your typical bad guy Loki.
Of course.
It's been good so far. I haven't had too many complaints.
All right, Nick, who do you have for, or what do you have for your Avengers pick?
Mine's a very interesting, unconventional take on the Avengers. It's the Ultimates, number 1 through 13. There's also the Ultimates 2. It's written by Mark Millar. Penciler is Brian Hitch. Anchors are Andrew Curry and Paul Neary. And colorist is Paul
Mounts.
Yep. It is just a bizarre take on the Avengers. And one of the reasons I recommend it is it's a good kind of You recommended the Ultimate Spider-Man because it's kind of like a retelling of it in almost a more realistic setting. This is the same, and it's mostly what the Avengers movie is based on from Joss Whedon's point of view. But it's also almost horrifically post 9/11 George W. Bush era comic with a lot of weird super pro-American almost propaganda in it that becomes a lot of fun and kind of a weird... It's this weird take on a lot of the characters. There's a scene where Captain America has just beat the Iraqi version of Captain America. And he points to his head and he looks at the A and he says, "This A doesn't stand for France." So it's all about what America was about back in kind of like 2002 to 2004. And it's just, the movies are kind of based off it. It's just kind of a weird, most realistic take you can get on these characters. And sometimes that's uncomfortable, but it's an interesting way to get into the Avengers.
Yeah, I'd say it's halfway in between classic, a comic book Avenger characters and movie Avenger characters. It's like right in the middle. It's a good bridge. What do you have for your Avengers pick, Andrew?
Well, my Avengers pick is Avengers Academy second semester. For in case you want a teen version of the Avengers, teen books. People like a teen book. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep making them.
Oh, do I ever?
it's written by Christos Gage, and
It's basically, if you want to hop into an Avengers book with no continuity importance, with no characters that were important before, during, or after this, this is the book for you, because otherwise you're going to get characters that are important now, then, or later. So this is the best book if you just want to watch people who are not really important in continuity at all.
Yeah, that book was very, very well received, critically acclaimed, all versions of it. So, yeah, especially for younger readers, I would definitely recommend Avengers Academy. My pick is Avengers Assemble by writer Kurt Busiek and artist George Perez. Couple, again, industry legends. And this, they had a long run from issue 1 to 56 when Avengers relaunched in the 90s after the Heroes Reborn fiasco, when they had Image creators working on Marvel characters in the 90s. Yeah, don't ask. But it's classic Avengers stuff. This Busiek clearly understands these characters and understands their importance in Marvel history. And it's, I mean, I don't think you can find an Avengers fan out there who doesn't love this run. I'll give honorable mention to the Korvac saga, which is a very classic, late 70s, early 80s, run of Avengers about this supreme being, and also Avengers Forever, which is also by Kurt Busiek, which is the event, like kind of like the final Avengers story told way in the future, where a bunch of different Avengers are gathered together from different eras of the Avengers to fight Kang the Conqueror. So that's a really great story as well. All right, Andrew, what do you have for your independent pick?
I've got two, because there's tons of good independent books. But if you want to stick with a writer that everyone knows, you can go with Scott Snyder. He wrote a book called AD After Death. It's a great book. I think the less you know about it going in, the better. But if you're a novel reader, this is probably an easier transition into comics, because there's a lot of exposition and less artwork. So definitely check that out if that sounds interesting. The other one I've got is Lil the Press Boy. If you don't want to get into the superhero scene, boy, is this the exact opposite of that. Relationship drama. Who doesn't like to follow a sad guy around?
Emo music.
I can't recommend this book more. If you love emo music, this is the book for you. The author is Steven Strubel, and the artist is Cedar Grace, and they come together to make some really a book that makes me smile.
All right, Manny, you're up. What do you have for your independent?
So anyone who knows me probably hates this book just because of how much I talk about it. Because coworkers, anyone who gives me a time of day, I tell them about how amazing Brian Edwards Hill's Postal is.
I'm like this
with
too.
Artwork by Isaac Goodhart. I mean, just from start to finish, just fantastic. Just you get... Yeah, it's about a small town in Eden, Wyoming. A FBI agent and a couple named Isaac and Laura Shifton have made a deal where they can pretty much make people disappear into this little community full of criminals, where they just kind of leave society. No jail, no nothing. Just get away. And it's the story of their son, Mark Shifton. He has Asperger's syndrome, and kind of his journey from being the local post office guy and his transition into the role of his mother. And I mean, just holy crap, this one of the best stories that you can read from start to finish, and it'll lead you right into reading other books like The Tithe and Think Tank, and you are not gonna be disappointed. It's even being worked on for a TV series currently, so
Hulu
tells you a little bit of how good that is. And then honorable mention, I didn't see it on your list, Jace, so I'm going to mention it. Letter 44 by Charles Soule.
I almost put it on there.
One of the just what happens when you come in as the 44th president and you find out that there's been aliens this entire time, and now you got to deal with it. It's such a good book, and it just wrapped up a couple months ago, so you can actually read the complete run. Beautiful art by Rafael Albuquerque on that book too, and just amazing colors. So that's what I have for independent.
Yeah, it's actually Alberto Albuquerque. There's two Albuquerques. Yeah, Raphael's the DC guy. What do you have there, Nick?
I kind of cheat a little bit because it was independent. Now it's not. I got Hellblazer, but it is the old school Hellblazer. Issues 1, Hunger, and issue 2, Feast of Friends. The writer is Jamie Delano, artist John Ridgway, and colors by Lovim Kinzerski. One of the reasons I like this, again, it ties back into other forms of entertainment. This is they did a Constantine TV show on NBC, which was okay, but it's the closest adaptation of a comic I've ever seen is the TV episode based on this. It's focused on poor Gary Lester, one of John Constantine's most classic friends, who brings back a hunger demon from him from another country following the events at Newcastle. And the sacrifices therein that lay in Constantine's way to fix things, and kind of isn't it perfect comic to kind of show Constantine's darker side and his ability to just do what he needs to do to fix problems, even if it means hurting his friends. So it's a great comic to start with. It's the first Constantine comic on his own, and I recommend it.
Okay, my pick for an independent is Irredeemable by writer Mark Waid, art by Peter Krause. This is basically the story, like, what if Superman woke up one day and just decided that, you know, I'm tired of helping those humans out. They're beneath me. They're ants. And I don't care anymore. And I'm just going to do whatever I want. And, you know, I'm sick of them. So that's Irredeemable. And what's interesting is, so I talked to Mark Waid at a show, I think – pretty, it wasn't right after Man of Steel came out, but it was relatively recently after Man of Steel had come out. And I mentioned to him, and Irredeemable came out long before the Man of Steel movie, but I mentioned to him, I'm like, so you know how Pa Kent raises Superman in that movie? If you were to raise Superman that way, you know what you end up with? You end up with Irredeemable. That's the story, right? Raising him without to not care about other people and to hide his powers and to kind of be ashamed. And you know, Pa Kent tells him, don't come and rescue me. I mean, it's so ridiculous, right? So that's what Irredeemable is. It's absolutely incredible. It's one of those books that I read it the first time, it's just like, oh my God, it's so brutal. You can't put it down. And I think Andrew has read the first issue Nick rather has read the first issue or two.
Yeah, I read the first two. It's awesome.
And you're like, oh my God. So that's my pick. I'll give honorable mentions to Clone, which is has the best cliffhangers of any comic I've ever read. Bar none, usually at the end of each issue. But unfortunately with issue 22, it finishes the first season and it ends on a cliffhanger and it's never come back. So it's kind of tough for me to recommend that one because it's an incomplete story, but it's still absolutely incredible work by David Schulner and his writing partners. And then the other one I'll mention is from Valiant. It's Harbinger by Joshua Dysart. And it's teenagers who have powers, who are not only trying to find their place in the world, but trying to understand these powers that they have, and what that means to have these superpowers. So that's a great book as well. All right. I know Andrew has to get going, so we're going to let him go first once more. Andrew, what's your wild card pick? The wild card is basically anything that maybe didn't fit any particular categories and maybe not quite so new reader friendly, but it's just something that we think is really awesome and deserves to have more people read it.
Yeah, I've got first pick on that is Aquaman Volume 1, The Trench. It's what the Aquaman that was launched with the new 52 with Jeff Johns writing and the gorgeous art of Ivan Reis. And if you think Aquaman is a stupid character, this is the book that shows you how wrong you are, because Jeff Johns can make anyone interesting, apparently. Because
he eats fish and chips.
Yeah, it's a great book. Definitely, before you ever make fun of Aquaman, read that book. The next one I'll recommend is Supergirl, Red Daughter of Krypton. This is a crossover between Supergirl and Red Lantern. Supergirl becomes a Red Lantern.
With Guy Gardner,
I know we made fun of earlier, getting punched in the face. So you couldn't possibly imagine yourself caring about Guy Gardner. It's time to go check out Charles Soule's run on Red Lanterns. You will actually
think Guy Gardner is a pretty cool guy by the time you're done. So definitely worth checking out.
All right, Manny, what do you have up for your wild card?
For my wild card, I couldn't get any wilder than Valiant's Archer and Armstrong. Both the run by Fred Van Lente and the one by Ralph Roberts. The trade actually just came out for that. Coming out this week. And I mean, just the most unorthodox duo that starts a relationship with one of them trying to kill the other. And I mean, they just go on these insane missions, the Michelangelo Code, Far, Far Away, Sex, Civil War, Mission Improbable, American Wasteland. I mean, it just gets weirder and weirder. I mean, one of the more important ones all takes place in Armstrong's bag.
His magic satchel.
Yes, and it's great too. And then they have to deal with Bacchus. And I mean, just so much fun in the book. I mean, it's not like necessarily even a superhero book. It's just a lot of fun, a lot of drinking, because Armstrong is a drinker, heavy drinker. And so, I mean, just really, really good, easy to get into. And just for honorable mentions, Pick Up Ninja X, that's a great book. I mean, almost anything Valiant, I would say. The only thing I didn't like was Dead Hand, I think it was called.
Dead Side.
Dead Side, I think that's what it was. That's the only one I wouldn't recommend. Other than that, you can't go wrong with what Jake said. Harbinger, definitely Imperium, Joshua Dysart. Oh my God. Toyo Harada is one of my favorite characters in the Valiant universe. Pick up Imperium. That's what I'm going to go with. My wild card, just go read Valiant. Just do that.
Go read Valiant. Good advice. What do you have, Nick?
All right. Andrew just took away my sheet of paper that shows all the artists and writers and stuff. But I have Vision issues 1 through 12 by Tom King. I don't know who did the art or the penciling.
Gabriel Hernandez Walta did the art, and the colors were by Jordi Belair.
Excellent. It's a fantastic book. It's very much, I was recommending someone read Mr. Miracle this week, and I drew a comparison to Vision, forgetting they were the same author.
Yeah.
Because they very are a similar, it's kind of like, it tackles both a superhero story and a family story in a very like fascinating way, in a way you would never have looked at Vision before in any other comic, as he sets out to build himself a wife, a son, and a daughter, and hope that all doesn't go the way of Westworld or Jurassic Park as far as artificial intelligence and science. I do have a runner-up. It's Wildstorm, Michael Cray by Brian Edward Hill. I'm not sure who draws it again. Actually, this wasn't even on my list.
That's John Davis Hunt.
It's a great unconventional DC book. Wildstorm, I think it's from a different universe or something.
Yeah.
But Michael Cray is tasked with hunting down a bunch of very strange version of the DC heroes, including a mad scientist Flash, a half sea monster Aquaman, and a very corporate Wonder Woman. And he even meets a Constantine who's more good than bad, because he's Constantine flipped, and Constantine's kind of a limey bastard. So it's also a great book, and also from Brian Edward Hill, which we brought up earlier.
Yeah, that's I mean, between Brian Edward Hill with John Davis Hunt and Brian Edward Hill on a Wildstorm, Michael Cray, and Brian Edward Hill with Miguel Mondoka on Detective Comics, that guy's spoiled with some incredible artists for sure.
Oh yeah.
All right, so I had a really, really tough time picking a wild card, and my list could have been 50 books long. I did narrow it down to, let's see, five, my top five, I guess. So if I had to pick one, like gun to my head, have to pick one, I'm going to go with Invincible from writer Robert Kirkman and artist Ryan Ottley. Part of the reason for this is that it's over. Like, it ended with like issue 142, I think, or 138 or something like that. So you can get a complete story. But it's just a really fun, solid superhero story. It's about a teenager whose dad is an alien, and so he's half alien. He has powers and all the foibles of being a teenager and trying to deal with going to school and having superpowers and everything. So you can almost think of it like a Spider-Man for the modern age. I also would highly recommend Think Tank from writer Matt Hawkins and artist Rasan Ekadel from Top Cow. This is one of those books that really shows you that comics can tell great stories beyond superheroes. Matt's telling the story of a guy who's a classic slacker, but is a total genius, and he works for DARPA, basically creating weapons for the American military, and how he kind of one day gets really tired of making weapons that kill people, and what happens when his crisis of conscience kind of takes over. And another thing I love about that book is all the science in that book is all real. So it's got some fantastical ideas about like invisibility cloaks and stuff like that, drones and all kinds of crazy stuff, but it's all based on real science. And in the back of the book, Matt Hawkins does a science class, which is like text pages that are usually 2 or 3 pages long, where he talks about where you can go and read up on all the technology in the book that seems like it's science fiction, but is in fact real. Also, Andrew mentioned Mr. Miracle from Tom King and Mitch Gerads. That's an incredible book telling the story of Mr. Miracle and Barda, and it's about family and fathers and sons and what it means to be a superhero and have a family and trying to balance those things. Also, I'll mention Green Lantern, specifically the Geoff Johns run, which is like super classic Green Lantern, where Johns introduced the emotional spectrum and all the different colors. You know, there's red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, black, white, that all got introduced in Geoff Johns' run. And he really brought Green Lantern from a low-selling title back to the forefront of the DC universe. It's as I said, very classic stuff and really cool. And the final book I'll mention is Morning Glories from writer Nick Spencer with art by Joe Eisma. So you can think of this as kind of a cross between Lost and, I don't know, maybe Freaks and Geeks or some kind of Riverdale. It's teenagers at a boarding school. There's more than meets the eye. There's mysteries. There's magic. There's all kinds. It's one of those books where you read it and it answers one question but presents 3 or 4 more. And so, yeah, if you're a fan of Lost, I really, really recommend Morning Glories. It's a really deep story, very dense story. There's like pages and pages of websites dedicated to examining and analyzing Morning Glory. So that's an incredible book as well. So I think that's going to do it for this supersized 40th episode. We've been going almost for 2 hours. We outlasted
Andrew. 400th.
400th. Yeah, that's what I said.
You said 40th.
Oh, did yeah, I? Check my day. 400th. My bad. Yeah, we even outlasted Andrew. So is there anything else anybody wants to say about collecting comics? Any last things to recommend?
Just do it. Just go to a comic book store and buy something. Don't wait. Do it. Just pick it up. Just pick something you like and buy it. You'll love it.
Do it. Do it now.
Yeah, if you've seen them, like Adam said, like don't, if you're a movie fan like me, like don't wait. Like don't wait for the next Avengers movie to come out. Go read some Avengers comics. Like get the stories now that they're going to make later.
Go buy the Infinity Gauntlet.
Exactly.
It's so different from the movie. Not that I've seen the movie, but it's so different from the movie that you'll love it. It's great.
Like if you're a movie fan, there's no reason you shouldn't be buying the comics also. It's better.
Yeah, just keep in mind that in comics they're called Infinity Gems, and the colors aren't quite the same as they are in the movie. They're the correct colors in the comics, and they're called Infinity Gems correctly instead of stones. So just bear that in mind. And and Thanos doesn't work for the World Wildlife Federation either. His motivations aren't
eco-terrorists.
Yeah,
he doesn't work for wildlife at all. They confirmed that if he were to snap and confuse it kills half the animals in the galaxy too.
Well, he's not an eco-terrorist. He's not trying to save natural resources. All right,
he actually is.
Not in the comic movies.
The one thing I'm going to mention is, you know, if you start collecting, you know, head always, even if you're buying digital, head to your local comic book shop, pick up some actual comic books, some so you can physically feel them in your hand, because the main reason is you got to support your favorite writers, your favorite artists, because if you don't buy the books, publishers think that there's no audiences for them, and a book that maybe you're getting from a friend or you're reading online or whatever that you're enjoying, it may go away just because you're not supporting it. So make sure you're supporting your local shop, and then also your favorite writers and artists, and then head out to a show and take a picture with them, take a book to get signed, tell them how much you love the book, and just really get immersed into the culture, because it's you'll find out that it's awesome, that there's a lot more people like us out there, and we have a really good time talking about these books. I mean, what is this, 400 episodes now talking about comic books? Yeah, and there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, that's right. We're way over 400, actually. It's just 400 of Comic Source episodes. We have Top Cow, we have specials, we have San Diego Comic-Con episodes, so we're well beyond 400. So that's a good point, though, Manny. Definitely support your local shop. Also, they're a good resource for you, right? If you have questions, ask the people that work at the shop. They will have answers for you, most likely. Because a lot of stuff you can find online, you know, you can Google and find stuff that you find answers to the questions you have. But sometimes there's no substitute for talking to somebody at a shop. They're oftentimes more knowledgeable than anything you can find on the internet. So yeah, I definitely recommend going in and buying some physical copies and finding yourself a good shop to go and hang out. And you can make new friends there as well. And the other thing I would mention is, obviously, keep listening to the Comic Source, because we're always recommending stuff. We're always reviewing new books. And if you don't like our particular style of podcasting, there's plenty of other great comic podcasts out there as well that you can discover. So, it's a great way to be part of a community and meet new people and learn about comics and learn about books that maybe are not on your radar, as you're learning to how to do this thing called collecting comics. So once again, we want to thank everyone for joining us. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform or app you use. The ratings really help us with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the website, please check out all the other coverage on your favorite upcoming TV shows and movies. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms to find out when we release new episodes, as well as following all our convention coverage. A quick reminder that Manny and I will be at San Diego Comic-Con coming up in about a week's time. If you're going to be there, please let us know. We love to meet listeners, take a picture, hook you up with the Comic Source lanyard, find out what you like about the show, maybe what you don't like. So let us know. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.